This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 27th of April, 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio studio in the centre of Sheffield. We're in the Sheffield Showroom Workstation building. Now, we're going out on FM radio and through our internet live stream, but however you're listening, the programme will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live podcast channel. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and there our podcasts live. Talking podcasts, last week's programme, we were talking smoking cessation, hypnotherapy, and much, much more. Mike Lawrence was in the studio, and he gave us an in-depth interview, along with one of his patients who he has helped. She was sceptical about whether hypnotherapy would help her quit smoking. It did. She came in and she told us exactly how on the programme last week. If you missed that, then look up the podcast of last week's programme, because it was an in-depth, detailed and interesting interview with Mike Lawrence. That was then, though. This is now. Who's on today's programme? Well, I'm really, really pleased that John Seaton is here in the studio. He's CEO of Twinkle. What's Twinkle? You're going to find out ever such a lot about it in just a few minutes. Also, David Battle. He is the MD of the NEX Exchange, an alternative stock exchange. And they were making their first visit to anywhere outside of London when they came to Sheffield on Tuesday for an event, which I went along to, interviewed David to find out what the NEX Exchange is and how it can offer businesses in the region access to capital and liquidity at the same time. But before we turn to our guests today, what else is going on in business and in social enterprise? Well, quite a lot, actually. This week, it's been Responsible Business Week. What is that? Well, that's an annual campaign that business in the community run. They champion and illustrate what being a responsible business means. And they celebrate those businesses that actively make a difference, not just this week, but 365 days a year. So they're all about businesses improving society and changing lives. And there have been a whole host of events, with a theme for 2018 being Pride of Place, highlighting businesses as a force for good in their local communities and for communities sharing pride in businesses that make a difference. So if you want to be involved, because it's the last day today of Responsible Business Week, all you need to do is look up Responsible Business Week. If you Google it, then you will find details of a map with lots and lots of events, a number of businesses shortlisted and longlisted for recognition of what they do, and much, much more. Take a look, find out. Now, that segues nicely into Community Business Week and Community Business Weekend next week. And Community Business Weekend, from the 4th to the 7th of May, will be showcasing community businesses, as you might expect. 300 or so community businesses are already taking part, and there are 100 events listed on a map. Market stalls, fashion shows, gardening workshops, plenty of exciting opportunities, plenty of exciting activities for families, for businesses, for social enterprises, for much, much, much more. And in last year, 150 independent events took place, and nearly 12,000 visitors were involved too. We'll be interviewing some community businesses on the programme next Friday. If you're running one, then get in touch, because if you'd like to be featured, if you'd like us to mention what you do, then all you need to do is drop me a line. We've featured a diverse range of community businesses in the past. So, for example, a pub called the Angler's Rest out in Bamford in the Peak District. It's a lovely place to go for a pint. It's a lovely place to go for a meal. And it was saved by a community share issue, in which the community of Bamford got together and said, well, we don't want the last pub in the village to disappear. This will be a hub. This will be a hub for our community. Now it's thriving, with a post office, with all sorts of events, gigs, much, much more, and spending hundreds of thousands of pounds on suppliers So local suppliers buying food, buying ingredients and other things from businesses in the Hope Valley. So more on community businesses next Friday. And if you want to put yourself forward to be featured, then just drop me a line. Send an email to jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Because whether you are running or starting a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an entrepreneur, self-employed, we're always keen to hear from you. So in a moment, we're going to be turning to our guest, our first guest today, John. But before we do, a couple of other things coming up next week. Our friends at the Business and IP Centre Sheffield are running everything you need to know to protect your business idea next week on Tuesday, 10:30 till 12:30. It's a free event. Businesses create and use intellectual property all the time, perhaps without even realising it. So you can go along to this event next Tuesday, free, but you do need to register to find out about how to protect your intellectual property and what the different types of intellectual property that you might be using and creating without even realising it actually are. So find us on Eventbrite, everything you need to know to protect your business idea. I'll tweet the link to that at the end of the programme today so that you can find it, and you don't even need to be a Twitter user with a Twitter account. Just look me up, go to Twitter and look up Jamie Veitch and you'll be able to find the links. What else? Well, Sheffield-based games developer Sumo Digital. They made their debut on the Stock Exchange in December, as listeners might recall. Well, they've reported a significant rise in revenue and they've moved away from a previous £52 million debt during a year of change. They reported their annual results this week, which included the details of their IPO, which valued the business at £145 million. Their revenues for last year stood at £30.6 million, up from £24 million the year before. Significant change in cash position to £12 million, a turnaround from debt. And they've described how the pictures demonstrate that they're going from strength to strength, and the year that culminated in the IPO has energised the business. So good news for Sumo. Right, so I think it's time to turn to our first guest today, John Seaton, CEO of Twinkle, in the studio with me. Good morning, John.
Morning, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for coming in. How are you today?
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you. No, I'm really, really well. You?
Yes, very well indeed. Good. Thank you. Looking forward to the weekend as ever. So, can you tell me a little bit? Well, first of all, can you introduce Twinkle? What is the business?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. So Twinkle's kind of one of those funny businesses that if you may not have heard of it, but if you've heard of it, you've really heard of it, if that makes sense. Yeah. So we're a specialised kind of digital publishing business, yeah. Specifically for education. So we don't do anything but digital content in education, but that specialism takes us very, very deep into that specific strand. So we started primarily in the early years, then moving up into kind of mainstream primary, and now into secondary more latterly as well. So specialist digital publisher is probably the best way of describing it.
Okay, grand. So when did you set up the business? When was it founded?
So it's founded in 2010.
Yep.
By myself and my wife.
Yep.
So kind of the story, we have a kind of quite a nice story. So it's a very entrepreneurial story. So my wife's a teacher.
Right.
And so she kind of came back to me one day kind of saying she couldn't get the content that she wanted. Mm. And I kind of looked at what was out there and was kind of a little bit frustrated probably at what I saw. Didn't have any children at the time, obviously. I kind of looked at the content that was out there and thought, you know, if my children were being taught using this content, would I be happy? The answer was no. And so I said to her, you know, we can do better than this. Let's go about it. Let's do something cool here.
And what was your background at the time then? You said your wife's a teacher. What were you doing?
Yeah, so I was actually training to be a lawyer at the time, I was. So we started the business 3 months into that training period, which probably gives you an indication of how much I was enjoying it.
I see.
my background is I did computer science at university. Mm-hmm. Then I thought it would be fun to be a lawyer, which I kind of later found out wasn't the thing I would enjoy the most. So trained to be a lawyer, and then started Twinkle, as I say, 3 months into my training. So that was in 2010.
Right, grand.
Yeah.
And your wife's subject, what was she teaching at the time?
So she's focused on the early years. So yeah, she's a foundation teacher.
Right.
So yeah, with the naught to, well, not the naught to, the 3 to 5, so young children.
Okay, grand. So she noticed this huge gap. The materials that she wished were available weren't available. She couldn't find them. You talked this through. You could see that was, you could both see that there was a gap there.
Mm.
And you founded the business. So from 2010 to now, what's the story of the business? Because I know, actually, that you've had some great news this week, which we'll come on to in a moment. Mm. But what did you concentrate on first? What did you prioritise first in 2010? Where did you focus? And then how did you develop?
Yeah, so it's, the business has come an awful long way since 2010, without question. I would probably say there have been two things we've always focused on from the start, and these are two kind of, for me, key business principles. And a lot of people kind of pay lip service to these and say these things are important, and fewer businesses tend to actually kind of put their money where their mouth is with these things.
Mm.
But for us, fundamentally, doing the right thing and serving the customer was always the most important thing from day one. And secondly, focusing on developing and supporting the right team around the business was also unbelievably important.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of the foundational blocks that we kind of started with really in 2010 and then developed. And kind of the story really, I guess, from 2010 to 2018 is very much probably the first 5 years were quite foundational for us. So we spent a long time, I would say, with our heads down, working extremely, we work extremely hard today, but working extremely hard, making a lot of content.
Yeah.
So that would, I would say that was kind of the first 5 years.
Right.
Because actually, you know, our product, so we it's a subscription-based service. So you're kind of buying into a library of content. And so actually building that library of content was absolutely essential.
Yes.
So that was the first 5 years. And then latterly, really from kind of late 2014, 2015, that's kind of where we've seen the most growth. And I think it's probably because the all of the early work has kind of really started to kick in terms of people, you know, finding value in what we're providing in a really significant way.
Yes, quite indeed. So building that library of content,
yeah.
You've talked about the effort put into that. Mm. I mean, I can imagine it must have been, it must continue to be phenomenal too. Did that give a point where it was difficult to start charging subscriptions until the library was there? And when did the revenue really start to kick in? Were you charging in that first year, and then did you increase the subscription rate when the library of content was bigger? How did that work for you?
Yeah, so our model is a freemium model, so we offer, and we always have offered, and we continue to offer the same level of free content that we offered at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so the first 2 years were completely free.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, we wanted people to be able to try the product and understand how valuable it was.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're starting out in business, it's sometimes difficult for people to see that value. And you need to, you know, sometimes you need to give your product away to demonstrate that. And so that was the first period. And then in terms of charging going into the future, we've the charge has increased by a reasonably nominal amount over the years. So from 2012 to 2018. And really, the intention is not to monetize our business in the way that we probably could monetize it. The intention is to support the teaching community, which is the whole reason we started the business, and that was the whole focus.
Yes.
And so we've continued to have that ethos. So, you know, we charge what we need to charge in order to build really high quality content, and that is 100% our focus.
And in terms of content, the number of resources are significant. We're talking something in the region of 500,000 resources, 500,000 teaching resources.
That's
within.
Correct,
and the numbers are also significant in terms of your members worldwide as well, and your users. Tell me a little bit about that. Who are the people who are using the resources, and where are they?
Okay. So our product is, the easiest way of imagining our business is kind of the Amazon for digital teaching content. That's probably if, you know, the listeners kind of picture that in their mind. And so, that therefore means we were kind of born digital, which meant that we were always able to sell our content overseas reasonably easily.
Yeah.
I say reasonably easy, I'll probably describe that later, but reasonably easy, easily. Most of our customer base is still in the UK. Yeah. We do split down the UK, so we serve England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland completely separate markets with separate needs, which I think is the right way of doing things. So primarily in the UK, but then increasingly into Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of Ireland, the UAE, the US, Canada. You know, these kind of generally they're English speaking countries that we're going into, because our product is fundamentally,
yes,
but not exclusively English language. And so we found those pathways to be particularly fruitful for us as a business.
Right, grand. Now that then leads to further questions, of course, which you've touched on, I think, in terms of the differences between education policy in different countries.
Yeah.
Within the UK as well, because of where education sits and so on. So to what extent do you have to tailor down on a country by country level, and how do you actually manage to do that?
So it's a great question. So in kind of traditional business theory, when you're creating those localized territories, one of the most important things you can do is to adapt to that market. It's a classic, what they call the classic kind of business lever. And so when you're doing that, what you're trying to really understand is the customer in that market, and that's completely fundamental, and it's very, very easy to overlook. So I would say if we went back a few years, what we would have done is kind of put out a bunch of products which suited the English, or probably more widely the UK market, and we were lucky that people in other countries found that content useful. That wasn't by design, that was by luck, which is fine. You know, you get that in business sometimes, that's okay.
Yeah.
And so as we've moved forward, what we've done is we've started employing people in those countries in order to generate the content that's appropriate for that market. And the difference when you start to do that is phenomenal, because it's unbelievably easy to assume that you put out a product and people love it, and you know, but actually when you start to put out a product that's very specific to a country, you then start to see the value, you know, to those users.
Yeah.
And more often it's the value in that very tailored product that the user sees, rather than the kind of the more generic stuff. So it's an incredibly important thing to do to get people in a country and start to produce content in that country.
Yeah. And so how do you find them, and how do they find you? I mean, you said at the start of the interview that either people haven't heard of you or they know ever such a lot about you.
Yeah.
So which is really, really interesting. Mm. And I suppose it demonstrates that you've got your positioning exactly right for people with whom you want to work, for whom you have excellent content. Then they obviously love what you do, and they can really, really see the value. And is that how you find people? They you approach them, they approach you, and your reputation from what you've built already helps you to make those relationships.
Yeah, that's right. So we're really fortunate in the sense that we have millions of users, and so if you've got very large numbers of people coming on our website, we're able to advertise those jobs. So
yes,
it's relatively easy for us to find new team members, which is, you know, a real fantastic, because we can then use, instead of paying somebody to find people or, you know, whatever those fees would be, we're actually using that money to create content, which is kind of what we're here to do fundamentally. So
absolutely. Yeah. Great. I was looking at the website yesterday and I've got it up in front of me, and we shall be we'll be giving out the URL for people to take a look in a few minutes. But you talked about users, website traffic users. So obviously significant, huge numbers here. As a digital publisher, you have a couple of issues that you must have addressed, which I'd like to ask you about, if I may.
Yeah.
First of all, the robustness of the website in terms of finding things that aren't necessarily that exciting, but are crucial for you. You know, if you don't have a robust hosting and so on, lots of businesses are using organizations like Amazon Web Services or other large providers now. Now, have you been through a process of moving from small provider to large provider for how the website is hosted? Have you made any mistakes that you've learned from? What have you done to make sure that the website is essentially always available for people and doesn't collapse under the weight of the people who want to take a look at it?
Yeah, it's another great question and very personal as well, because that's probably one of our, I'd say that's one of our biggest challenges over time. If you get, I don't know, 10,000 people kind of rock up, you know, at one point in time, you know, within, you know, space of 20 minutes, which is literally what we have, you know, going, managing that traffic volume is very, very difficult. And so we've gone through a process over a period, both in terms of the web infrastructure we use and also the way that the site is coded. Yeah. And both of those things have required an awful lot of work to bring them up to scratch. So obviously, you know, you go back to 2010, you know, between probably 2010 and maybe even 2014, you know, I would have probably been the main technical lead.
Right.
Now, okay, so I did a computer science degree. I spent most of my childhood playing with computers. That's fine. That doesn't necessarily mean that you can scale a website. And I can tell you that definitely doesn't mean you can scale a website, because I've had the experience. So we've had, many, many fun issues when, and by fun, I mean difficult issues.
Sounds like type B fun. Wasn't fun at the time.
It wasn't fun at the time, but it's always good to look back on and say, actually, I'm not in this situation, which is brilliant. And also I learned through that situation, which of course is completely crucial in business and in life. And so having the right people coming on board and helping us scale the website in an appropriate way was really important. And of course our website isn't just made up of one piece of structure. There are multiple pieces of structure which come together to make the website, in inverted commas, that you see and that you experience. And so that's been an unbelievably important journey, and the coding as well has been a really, really important journey as well. And you know, you hear stories about Facebook who basically took I'm going to get a little bit technical, but hopefully it'll be useful for people, a front-end caching system, which basically allows pages to be delivered very quickly. They basically designed their own caching system around an existing system because that didn't work for them. And so that's kind of a great example of somebody having to take an existing product and basically build their own thing because it just doesn't work for them. And so we will do things like that as well, where actually there are no systems out there. And so one of our, not from a website, a front-end website perspective, but from a back-end website perspective, one of the most important things we've done is build our own production system, because there is no production system that's out there. So we have our own custom production system, which basically allows us to work 24 hours a day and also to have content put in from anywhere in the world and go through a high-quality production process, which guarantees quality and then come out the other end. So that piece has also been really important.
Right, okay. Well, thanks for that. That's really helpful, I think, for you to have described that, and also to have described how, as you perhaps grew, you were doing it. Now you're presumably hiring developers, working with teams as well, and hopefully having less of those moments where you want to throw a laptop out of a window and cry. But it sounds like you've really been able to maintain the website in a way that it is robust as you've grown over over the years and the significant growth that you've experienced. So, and we're needing to be able to serve the website to 10,000 people within 20 minutes or so. Yeah, we'll put a strain on it, certainly.
It is, and we're just, you know, a recurring theme throughout this business, which I've have the, you know, the privilege of being able to start and run, is having the right people, you know, is completely vital. And, you know, knowing where you're strong and knowing when you're where you're weak. And I'm personally very lucky to have a really fantastic bunch of people who've wanted to join me on the journey we're on.
Yes.
And, you know, that really is a defining factor of any great business, for sure.
Fantastic. In terms of people, great.
Yeah.
Okay. So you and co-founder Susie and you're married. You had some wonderful news this week. So it was not the first award, but it's a pretty significant award, which was announced on Saturday.
Yeah.
Just gone. Tell me the award that you won.
Yeah. So we've entered quite a few awards over the years. Around kind of October time last year, we entered in for a Queen's Award.
Yeah.
So Queen's Award for Enterprise, and we were again massively privileged to have won that this year. So it's a Queen's Award for Enterprise in international trade.
Mm.
So it's I guess an honour for the team, really, in the work that we do in taking our product out there globally. Because obviously, like I said, we sell in the UK, but we actually sell our product to 150 countries worldwide, which is kind of a crazy statistic if you think about it, despite the fact we've pretty much done no marketing in any of those countries. So it's kind of a bit mind-boggling. But, you know, the award for me is really a sign of recognition that, you know, that the team is doing, you know, is serving the mission. Our mission is to help those who teach, is serving the mission in the way that we always, that Susie and I envisaged when we started. So it's, you know, a huge compliment to them. And you know, and also for us, I think a real thank you to customers, not only in the UK, in the teaching community in the UK, who have supported us and allowed us to do that. Because, you know, Susie and I didn't do it on our own. It was the teaching community who supported us. So really, for me, it's an honour for the teaching community in the UK. And also, you know, kind of a nice shout out to all, you know, customers in countries I'm probably never going to visit in my lifetime, but they're, you know, they're still there using our content, which is brilliant.
This is remarkable.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's something like 168 countries that you have customers within now.
Yeah, it's when you look at the reach, it's quite phenomenal. I mean, I was looking with a chap who came in who's probably going to be running our South Asian operations soon. We were looking at the schools that we have signed up, because we sell to both individual teachers and to schools, the schools we have signed up in South Asia and up into China as well. And it's quite incredible to see the numbers when you kind of look in different countries. And I kind of just assume, oh, we don't sell many subscriptions into China, do we? And you look at it and you're like, yeah, we sell loads of subscriptions into China. What are you talking about, John? And so that's quite amazing to see. But you've then even kind of got the outliers as well. So as part of that, I was kind of looking at, you know, what other countries. And you look and actually then you realise you've got the only school on the Falkland Islands, and you've got the only school on the Isles of Scilly, and, you know, and you've got Christmas Island. And you realise it's kind of, it's just everywhere, which is... Yeah. You know, an amazing thing. And I mean, yeah, brilliant.
Well, it really must be, absolutely.
Yeah.
So was it the case that you were first of all focusing on teachers and trying to get teachers to say, I as a teacher would like to subscribe to get access to these resources, and whether the school will pay for it, I'll pay for it because it will help me? Or did you focus first on the schools and getting schools to pay? Or did you segment in that way when you were growing the business, perhaps initially? Or because you were offering a freemium kind of product and people had some access anyway, you were sort of seeing what happened anyway. Did you consciously go, first of all, we go for the individual and then the institution, or the other way around? I'm just curious on that front.
I think fundamentally this is probably one of the reasons we started freemium, is because Our preference was never to charge the individual teacher because that wasn't, I think for both Susie and I, we didn't feel like it was something that we felt a teacher should be paying for.
Mm.
Now, that's quite a difficult one because you've still got to be able to pay people's wages. And unless you have money, you can't do that. And so it naturally came that the teacher community did support us in that and did pay for the content. And then latterly, schools kind of adopted in more significant numbers. So, it was always our intention for ultimately the schools to be paying, because we felt like it was a tool that a teacher would need. So therefore, it's for the school to pay for the tools for the teaching staff.
Yeah.
And so that was always the focus.
Okay, grand. Now, there's an issue in terms of digital delivery that I'd like to unpick and ask about as well, if I may, in terms of when you're a business trading internationally and delivering a product which isn't physical, which is a download.
Yeah.
It can be very complicated for some businesses to deal with taxation, VAT, mm-hmm. if it applies, or local taxation and so on.
Yep.
Have you had to investigate that? Have you had to take specialist advice in terms of making sure that you're complying in the different jurisdictions in which you are trading, even if the business is located here? And has it been difficult or has it been easy? I mean, you're making it sound easy in some ways, but you're making it sound as though it's been significant amount of well thought out hard work. But sometimes I find that people who have achieved a great deal make it sound easy. And that isn't necessarily to say it was easy, but did you find it challenging? Did you have to take any specialist advice? And to other publishers operating internationally, would you like to share anything you found out?
I think you always take specialist advice, and you always, it's quite easy to assume you know what you're talking about. And the reality is, in virtually every circumstance, you probably don't really know what you're talking about until you've had the experience, and then you can start to build that. So if you've never had that experience, then absolutely. So yes, we have. And we've tried to keep our model very straightforward and simple, in the sense that actually the UK is the base of where we charge from.
Yes.
One thing I've been very, very keen to always maintain is that I've always wanted to be based in a jurisdiction where we actively pay tax as well. Now, obviously, I'm not going to mention other companies which people can think of who try and do the opposite of that.
Mm.
But my personal view is actually you should be paying tax in a jurisdiction. And at the end of the day, public services don't run unless people pay tax. So if you're actively trying to avoid tax completely, then, well, not only is it illegal, but actually it's completely moral. And that's not a place we want to go as a business. And actually is reasonably easy to set up in those jurisdictions, but we've always wanted to be based we've always wanted to stay based in the UK.
Yeah.
And we've always wanted to pay UK tax and to contribute back into this society. And fundamentally, actually, out of all of our staff, the vast majority are from the UK. So, we feel a great sense of responsibility to support this region in particular.
Yes. Well, it's great to hear you say that. Mm. And that will chime with discussions at the MADE Entrepreneur Festival last November, when many entrepreneurs stood up and said, entrepreneurs, pay your taxes. And, we employ people. We employ people who've been to school in schools that, need to be paid for, or who are treated in hospitals or and so on. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's the model that some larger organisations try to use in terms of minimising appears to be somewhat, vampiric, if you like. But great to hear you talk about your feeling in terms of responsibility there.
Yeah, and I think there is a reality. I always say it's reasonably easy to make money in a way that that isn't always beneficial to people. But at some point, that thing then comes back and bites you. And it's at the point at which it comes back and bites you, you realize. And there are a number of companies out there right now that are experiencing that. Yeah. Big kind of global companies whose products aren't necessarily entirely beneficial for people, and certainly the way that they deploy them isn't always beneficial for people. So, you know, I'm personally really looking forward to that kind of returning back to actually, you know, product X is a fantastic product, but how do we, you know, design it ethically and really use it to benefit society? Because, you know, there are many fantastic global products that have benefited society, but you know, there's always a point with those products where somebody's asking for a bit more money, and it's at that point that you then start to kind of, you know, go into a slightly different arena. And so that's always a challenge in business. I'm sure every business has that challenge, but, you know, that for us, fundamentally, it's about doing the right thing.
Yeah, great. Okay, thanks, John. That's interesting to hear. So John Seaton, CEO of Twinkl, is here in the studio with me, and we've been talking about Twinkl, what the business does, how it's operating, how it's helping teachers throughout the world. Recent Queen's Award for Enterprise in International Trade, which was announced on Saturday, so fantastic. John, the business clearly has gone from strength to strength since you and Susie founded it in 2010. What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you launched?
Probably a lot of things. my background wasn't in business. So, you know, I'm clearly able as a businessman. So I think that's probably what my calling always was, even if I didn't realize it. But, you know, as you move forward, you have to educate yourself and you have to learn. And, you know, I do an awful lot of reading, kind of been on a lot of business courses, currently doing an MBA, which is fun, alongside running
right,
a business.
Yeah. Where are you doing the MBA?
At Oxford University. So, so that's kind of interesting. But in terms of what I would say to myself back when I started, I think the classic entrepreneur tends to, and I'm kind of probably about 85% classic entrepreneur in my mind, is very, very impulsive and will kind of say, actually, we're going to do this really cool thing, or we're going to go and do this thing, and let's hit this opportunity. And you'll certainly hear that from me if you ever kind of listen to me in our business. But the negative side of that is sometimes being impulsive causes other difficulties. And I think back to when I started the business, and I think there were, you know, a few situations where being impulsive later created problems a little bit later down the line. And they weren't problems that we couldn't deal with, but I think it's things that, you know, if it's a big decision, you know, and you're an entrepreneur and you know you're going to be impulsive about something, just take a step back. And I have to say that to myself even today, because even today there are large decisions I kind of feel like, oh yeah, let's just go and do that thing and let's get it done really, really quickly. But actually, you know, taking that step back and saying, okay, this is a bigger decision, John. You probably don't just want to make this in 20 seconds. It's probably not going to be the right. In fact, it's definitely not going to be the right thing. There's no probably about it. So, but actually, again, I find I'm privileged to have a fantastic bunch of guys with me, and those guys will hold me to account against those things, which is, you know, another kind of business essential, is having people who won't just say yes to you, but who will challenge you and who will say, I think you're being a bit stupid there, or something stronger if you need to hear it. And, you know, I totally think that's kind of a vital part of business.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, that's really helpful. That's good to hear. And actually, many folk will recognise the description of impulsiveness and the ability to make a lot of decisions quite fast as a classic entrepreneurial trait, of course. And that can lead to lots of positive effects, but it can lead to consequences too, as you say. Yeah. Also vital to have people who will challenge you, to have people who have strengths that you don't have as well, and to have people to hold you to account too. So interesting there. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, John. Where next for the business?
Good question. I mean, kind of feels like we're already all over the place. I mean, we've got some quite big ambitions this year. So we have an office in the UK and Australia. So we run 24-hour customer support. We also design content 24 hours, which is brilliant. So we've identified another location in the world that we'd like to have an office. So we're going to kind of get on with that. And I think we've kind of got this year's really about focusing in on getting some aspects or kind of internal aspects of the business even basically doing those even better than we're doing them now, and being very, very focused in that. And then other aspects are actually how do we make a positive impact in the wider community, and how do we design even more exciting and engaging products?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think probably this year we've given ourselves the most challenging objectives we've ever given ourselves, which is good until you have to deliver them. But, you know, you need healthy challenge.
Yeah.
You absolutely need healthy challenge. And so, I think it's going to be a fun year. And I think for me, I'm just pushing even more deeply into focusing in on our mission of helping those who teach is just fundamental, and working out, you know, the other ways which we can help those who teach, which aren't necessarily the way we're doing it at the moment. I think the more we can do that, and the more we can focus down, the more we can, understand our the teaching communities in every region at an even deeper level, the better we'll do for everybody. And it's, you know, it's about how do we benefit everybody in this equation. So
grand. So, yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, John. It's been absolutely great to talk with you. Can you give the link to Twinkle?
Absolutely. So it depends on where you are in the world. But our main website is twinkle.co.uk. So that's Twinkle without an E.
Yep.
Email me and ask me about that another day. But Twinkle without an E.co.uk. But you can access, you know, twinkle.com, twinkle.com.au, twinkle.co.nz. You can access that anywhere in the world with a localized domain. But twinkle.co.uk if you're in the UK.
Super. John Seaton, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with Jamie Veitch. We've been talking with John Seaton today of Twinkle. I can't get the words out, but it's okay because we're going to have some music now. We're going to play a track of music chosen by John. This is James Taylor. The track is Copperline.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Every week we cover business, we cover social enterprise, and we're always interested in hearing from you. You can put yourself forward to be on the show. You can contact us to tell us something you'd like us to cover, or put someone else forward. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, send a text 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter too. Now, we've been talking today with John Seaton, CEO of Twinkle. If you've only just tuned in, it was a fascinating interview about Twinkle, what they do, how they do it. And the podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. So, what else? Well, David Battle is the MD of Markets for the NEX Exchange, a stock exchange. Say stock exchange, and you might think about the London Stock Exchange or the alternative investment market. But there is another stock exchange, a regulated stock exchange, the NEX Exchange. And David was in Sheffield this week at an event, which I went along to on Tuesday. And afterwards, I had a quick chat with him, and we'll broadcast the interview with David right now. So, David, hello. Thanks very much for joining me on the radio today. First of all, can you tell me what NEX is, what NEX is?
Okay, NEX or NEX is or NEX Exchange. We're a UK regulated stock exchange, so we're a stock market that's focused on smaller companies and helping companies with their capital growth.
Okay, grand. Now, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know that there is an alternative to London Stock Exchange, and they operate the AIM market as well. But you have many household names listed on NEX Exchange. There are a few companies that I will have heard of, that listeners will have heard of. Do you want to mention a few?
Yes, of course. So we're fortunate enough to have companies such as Arsenal Football Club. We have English wine company Chapeldown Wines, Shepherd's Neame, Adnams and Thwaites, food and beverage companies. So yeah, and we mix across all sectors. So we have people in technology, engineering, mining, resources, and really all sorts of many different areas.
Okay, grand. And what sort of level of company size is the minimum level that would come onto NEX?
Well, there's no minimum per se, because I think the costs of joining a market are relatively fixed. But I think there's probably a sensible level. I think the where it makes economic sense in terms of your stage of development. So our companies start from around about 1 million market cap. Mm-hmm. From some of the companies I've mentioned, as you can see, there are the extremes. But typically, you know, between one and 25 million is a fairly sort of typical range of a size of company that would join an exchange such as ours.
Right, okay, grand. Now, just to be clear then, the benefits of being listed on NEX in terms of liquidity, you've outlined in a presentation in Sheffield today in front of a number of businesses, but can you just go through the benefits of a listing?
Yeah, I mean, the benefits of listing are quite varied depending on the particular company. I think every company is unique in terms of its needs and requirements. But fundamentally, we're a platform and environment where people can come and raise capital.
Right, yep.
The exchange itself doesn't raise capital, but people can raise capital from a variety of sources. Once they're on that exchange, whether they've raised either debt or equity capital, then we operate a live market for secondary trading. So that means there's always a price. So anybody investing in a company that's on Next Exchange means that they can buy or sell shares in those companies freely on the market through the UK stockbroker network.
Great. And again, that was a very succinct and clear description. Thank you for in terms of benefit. Now, you're not a social impact exchange yourself. There are some exchanges which describe themselves as social stock exchanges even, and that was the title of one, but you have described how you can work in collaboration with people who are trying to create social impact at the same time as a financial return. Can you just...
Absolutely, yeah. Actually, as an exchange, we're purely commercial. A great belief whether you're social impact or not, that clearly the investment proposition would stand up to the requirements of all sorts of investors. We have worked very closely with the Social Stock Exchange, I believe now known as more the Impact Investor Network.
Yep.
What we do is we provide a segment on our market where investors who are particularly looking for social impact companies that have been designated by those bodies such as the Social Stock Exchange as providing social impact, positive social impact, then they can go in that segment, which means an investor particularly looking for companies where their motivation is to get a return on their investment, to be investing in something for the social good, then they can easily find those on Next.
Yes, I see. Okay, that's helpful. Thanks. Now, if an organisation, if a company listening to this interview with you were to take a look at NEX, to do look at your website, there are plenty of information there, and to think, well, yes, actually, this sounds like this could be for me. This could help our business. What's the process that they go through? How long does it take? And who should they be talking with?
Great. Well, initially, we'd be delighted to talk to them ourselves as an exchange. We see our role very much of helping people on their first foray into public markets. And that requires work. So it requires a company to work with specialist corporate finance advisors. And naturally, as part of the whole process of due diligence and verification, they'll need to work with the law firms and accountants that they may or may not already know. Mm. So if we look at those partners and fundraising, what we try and do is help to introduce the right partners. Mm-hmm. So working with those partners, as our market is designated suitable for retail investors, then there's a fairly thorough process that people will go through. It can be done managed very effectively with these specialists. But typically a company who was focused on getting a listing or quotation on the market, I mean, it would typically take about 3 to 6 months overall from start to finish. Naturally, a lot of variables depending on the structure and type of company.
Excellent. Well, that's been really helpful, David. Thank you very much for joining me on the radio today. Can you just give out the website address yourself so that people can take a look and of course, through the website, they can get in touch and contact you?
Absolutely, they can, yes. So we are www.nexexchange.com. And yes, through the website, you can easily find a way to contact us and give us your information. We have a small team of people that will be delighted to speak with you.
Fabulous. David Battle, thank you.
Thank you very much, Amy.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been joined on the programme today by David Battle. You've just heard him. He is the MD of markets at the NEX Exchange. He was in Sheffield on Tuesday. And earlier in the show, we've had a 35-40 minute interview with John Seaton, Chief Executive of Twinkl, going from strength to strength, operating worldwide. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed those interesting, fascinating interviews, then don't panic, because the podcast for today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live podcast section of the website. Go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and the podcast of today's programme, the 27th of April, will be there from about 11 a.m. So we'll be back on air next Friday. It's a community business weekend next Friday taking place, showcasing the hundreds, thousands of community businesses all over the UK. If you're one and you want to be on this programme, then send me an email, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text me 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well, and we're really keen to hear from you. So we'll be back on air next Friday, 9 through to 10, but don't go away now. Next up on Sheffield Live, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. Thank goodness indeed. We're going to play out with some Nick Drake. This is Northern Sky. Thanks for listening. Thanks to my guest, and thanks to Sangeeta in the studio as sound engineer. Back next week.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.